Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This translation. I had a profound affection for Lord Krishna. The Pandavas, who were of the Kuru dynasty, accompanied him for a considerable distance to see him off. They were overwhelmed with the thought of future separation. The Lord, however, persuaded them to return home, and he proceeded towards Dwarka with his dear companions. So we'll read text 34 to 35. O Shonaka, the Lord then proceeded towards Kuru Jangala, Panchala, Surasena, and the land on the bank of the river Jamuna, Brahmavarta, Kurukshetra, Matsya, Sarasvata, the province of the desert, and the land of scanty water. After crossing these provinces, he gradually reached the Saurvirya and Abhirya provinces. Then, west of these, reached Dwarka at last. Purport, the provinces passed over by the Lord in those days were differently named, but the direction given is sufficient to indicate that he traveled through Delhi, Punjab, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, Saurashtra, and Gujarat, and at last reached his home province at Dwarka. We do not gain any profit simply by researching the analogous provinces of those days up to now. But it appears that the desert of Rajasthan and the provinces of scanty water, like Madhya Pradesh, were present even 5,000 years ago. The theory of soil experts that the desert developed in recent years is not supported by the statements of Bhagavatam. We may leave the matter for expert geologists to research because the changing universe has different phases of geological development. We are satisfied that the Lord has now reached his own province, Dwarka Dham, from the Kuru provinces. Kurukshetra continues to exist since the Vedic age and is sheer foolishness when interpreters ignore or deny the existence of Kurukshetra. Text 36. On his journey through these provinces, he was welcomed, worshipped, and given various presentations. In the evening, in all praised places, the Lord suspended his journey to perform evening rites. This was regularly observed after sunset. Purport, it is said here that the Lord observed the religious principles regularly while he was on the journey. There are certain philosophical speculations that even the Lord is under the obligations of fruitive action. But actually, this is not the case. He does not depend on the action of any good or bad work. Since the Lord is absolute, everything done by him is good for everyone. But when he descends on earth, he acts for the protection of the devotees and for the annihilation of the impious non-devotees. Although he has no obligatory duty, still he does everything so that others may follow. That is the way of factual teaching. One must act properly himself and teach the same to others. Otherwise, no one will accept one's blind teaching. He himself is the awarder of fruit of results. He is self-sufficient, and yet he acts according to the rulings of the revealed scripture in order to teach us the process. If he does not do so, the common man may go wrong. But in the advanced stage, when one can understand the transcendental nature of the Lord, one does not try to imitate him, that is not possible. The Lord in human society does what is the duty of everyone. But sometimes he does something extraordinary and not to be imitated by the living being. His acts of evening prayer, as stated herein, must be followed by the living being, but it is not possible to follow his mountain lifting or dancing with the gopis. One cannot imitate the sun, which can exhaust water even from a filthy place. The most powerful can do something which is all good, but our imitation of such acts will put us into endless difficulty. Therefore, in all actions, the experienced guide, the spiritual master, who is the manifested mercy of the Lord, should always be consulted, and the path of progress will be assured. Namo Vishnu Upadaya Krishna Prasthaya Budhaya Srimadeva Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanavane Namaste Sarasutundeva Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya De Siddharna. Natasya karyam karnam chavidite natatsamastya vyadikastrijushite parasya shaktir vidayarashuyate svabhavaki jnana bala kriya cha. That the Lord has nothing to do, natasya karyam karnam chavidite. Because doing something in this material world means that one has some objective. Without the conditioned soul having some objective, while he was doing his activities, there would be no karma being produced. In other words, one who has some desire in the material world, by his activities, he creates future existences in material existence. So this is a question of what is the free will of the living entity? That is the living entity simply being forced to act according to the nature he's acquired? Then where is there any question of free will? Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered soul under the influence of the three modes of nature, he thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by the three modes of nature. In one sense, the living entity is not doing anything. Krishna says, anadi dvam gunani vat paramatmayam avyayam sharira stopi konteya nakaroti nanalipyate. Anadi dvam means, where we have that word van means, it means possessor of. Anadi means endless, no beginning, no end. So living entity has no beginning and no end. He's endless. It wasn't that when the appearance of a certain body, he came into existence, and with the disappearance of a certain body, he ends his existence. No, the living entity is endless. But now we see he's come in contact with the modes of material nature, so does that mean that he's influenced by the modes? No. Anadi dvam nirgunadvat. He's nirguna. Even contacting the modes of material nature, he doesn't at all become in any way influenced by the three modes. Anadi dvam niragunadvat paramatmayam avyayam. Sharira stopi kunteya nakaroti nanalipyate. He's not doing anything. Karoti, nakaroti, nanalipyate. Nor is he actually entangled by his activities. So, in one sense, we say the living entity, he's not doing anything. The other, he's completely beyond the material nature, so then there's no problem. All right, we're beyond the modes, we're not doing anything, we're not entangled, we're endless, so there's no problem. So any problem, if anyone comes to you with a problem, just say your only problem is that you think you have a problem, but actually there are no problems. So that's a fact. The only problem the living entity has is he thinks he has a problem. That's his only problem. And why does he think he has a problem? Because he's identifying himself with the gross and subtle bodies. And because he identifies himself with the gross and subtle bodies, he only has problems. Because if you think about it, for the gross body, there's only problems. Whether it's a problem, what to eat, or when to eat, or where to sleep, or how to, so many problems. The material body simply means one endless collection of problems. And maybe someone's more expert at solving problems, but everyone in the material world has problems. Because the very nature of material existence is problematic. And at the end, the final solution is that everyone dies. After trying to solve all the problems, the final lack of solution, the final problem that no one can solve is the fact that we have to die, and that's the major problem. So for the real problems, there are no solutions, but for the minor insignificant problems, there are some temporary solutions, but even for those, there are no solutions. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, punak punas charvita Charavanana. One is simply winding up, doing the same thing again and again, getting up in the morning, eating something, working hard so we can get some money to get some more something to eat, and then going to sleep and try to forget about all the problems one had trying to get something to eat. And then at the end, one finally dies and comes back again to do the same thing over and over again. Matirana Krishne Parataksatova. But the actual solution, that is to become Krishna conscious, people are not very much interested in. Matirana Krishne Parataksatova. Generally, they're trying to solve their problems either by swa, by one's own personal endeavor, by parata, by taking shelter of others, or mito, by a combination of both. But the real problem is it's called griha vratana. One is maintaining some limited conception of one's identity. Limited conception means one is thinking, I am this body, and therefore if somehow or another I can make my body strong and healthy, everything will be all right. Or, now my body is strong and healthy, now I'll make my family happy, so if my wife and children, they're satisfied, no more problems. But now my society is economically, there's some crisis, let me join the Red Cross or something like that and help the society. Or all humanity, let me benefit all of humanity, make everyone happy, become Santa Claus. So in this way, everyone is trying to expand their feeling of trying to solve problems, but because their solutions always remain within the material conception, there's no end to the problems, no matter how good the solutions are. Even the most expert personalities in the material world who are trying to solve the problems, they have never reached the end of problems, and even they die. So what to speak of the insignificant little living entities? The example is given, just like the big strong horses, they're about to cross a river, so one horse goes into the river and gets swept away by the current. And then another horse, big and strong, goes into the river to cross the river and gets swept away by the current. Then another horse, big and strong, gets swept away. And finally one teeny little scrawny, thin, powerless little horse is about to go into the river and try himself. So the big strong horses, they can't do it, but the tiny insignificant horse is going to try. So everyone is laughing. So living entities in this present society, present modern society, they're insignificant. They can't do anything, even to solve their own problems, and yet they're declaring boldly, we've conquered the universe. We found that we know everything practically now. Although 1 minute these so-called scientists, they're declaring boldly that we know everything, that just like they said, there was one element in the universe which weighed more than everything. But then they calculated after some reviving their calculations, they discovered that actually this element now weighs less than nothing. Slight mistake. And these are the great leaders of society, and people are saying, oh, very intelligent, so profound. Who can understand what they're doing? So, therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, Matirana Krishne, Natevidu Swartikatim hi Vishnu. People don't know what the real solution to their problem is, what the goal is. They're working hard, trying to get to some goal, what they think is the goal. Nowadays, the goal is to make money, buy your house, retirement house, and when you get old, then you can do the real valuable things in life, like play checkers until the end of your last breath. You can work for 50 years, so you can finally retire and play checkers. So people don't know what the goal is. They think the goal is to play some video game or some checkers or play shuffleboard or something. And Dharashaya, ye bahi artamanina, because they don't know what the real goal of life is. Shri Radhagopina Kijai. They can get an eternal existence, solve all the problems, they can live forever on unlimited happiness, but no, they want to spend their life so they can buy a checkerboard. Dharashaya, ye bahi ardhamanina. They take something completely insignificant and they take that as all encompassing goal of life. Andaya tandera upagya manas tepi shatantra uru dami bada. Because they're taking shelter of so-called leaders who are blind. So-called leaders who don't have any idea that they're not their body. They don't know that there is a God. They have simply they've been misdirected, uneducated. But by some manipulation of votes or by some previous activities, they become powerful. But these powerful persons are considered to be Svavidra Hostra Karar, Samstuta Purusha Pashu, simply animals who are glorified by smaller animals. Big animals, powerful animals, but after all, their mentality is in the bodily concept of life, so they have the same mentality as the common everyday cow or ass. So, Eva Gokara. Therefore, they don't know what is the real problem of life and how to solve it. So here it mentions that they even think when the Lord comes that he's also under the fruit of activities. In other words, people, whatever they're doing in the material world, either trying to gain something or try to avoid unpleasant circumstance, by that very desire to do that, they become entangled in the actions and reactions of fruitive activities. As soon as one gets a material circumstance and identifies himself with it, then he'll either think himself, he'll either desire something, a more favorable circumstance than he presently has, or he'll be worried about his present circumstance being endangered by some material circumstance. Therefore, he'll simply be desiring either for more favorable circumstances or desiring to avoid unfavorable circumstance, all based upon his present material circumstance. So this creates karma, this desire by the living entity. The Lord is situated in his heart, and he understands the desire of the soul, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. So desire, Prabhupada writes, is a subtle form of conditioning for the soul. So as soon as the soul becomes attached to certain material desire, either attached or averse to it, then the result is he becomes entangled by it. And by such entanglement, he creates a future circumstance for his suffering or so-called enjoyment. Just like bees, they gather different pollen from the different flowers, and they come together and they create honey in the beehive. Similarly, by all our successive desires and activities, come together and create future activities and desires. But in the present circumstance, the living entity has the free will. Free will means, that's where the word proactive comes from. Proactive means the living entity has free will. He can use his conscience, he can use his intelligence, he can use his own will and determination, not simply to become attached to whatever desires are flowing through his mind at the present time. Instead, real free will means that he can become attached to the desires of the Lord. That the Lord, who ultimately knows what's best for everyone, who ultimately is the controller of everything, including Maya, Srila Vyasadeva, when he was meditating, the first thing he saw was that the Supreme Lord, that Maya had taken shelter of him. that the Supreme Lord was independent, and that Maya was just like the shadow taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Yaya samohite jiva atmakam shigunatmakam. That is only due to the living entities bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite chale apaishat purusham purnam maya chat tad apashrayam. So maya, that by meditation bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male, that when one is able to see things clearly, one can see that maya is not the ultimate controller. The ultimate controller is Krishna. Yaya samohito jiva atmakam trigunatmakam paropi manite naratam what's the next word? Satkritam chapipadyate. That the living entity, only because he's identifying himself with his body, does he undergo the reactions of the three modes of material nature. Only because the living entity falsely identifies himself with the body, therefore he becomes subjected to the good and bad that the body experiences. Anarto pasamam sakshat bhakti yoga arhokshajam lokasya janato vidvam chakre satvita samhita. So Śrīla Vyāsadeva, out of his kindness, he gave us a remedy so we can get free from these misconceptions, and that's principally by hearing the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. By hearing about Krishna, one can associate with Krishna, and if one accepts the same mentality that Krishna has, the same consciousness, if one accepts Krishna's philosophy, then the result is that one ceases to become identified with this temporary material circumstance. So, Krishna himself, when he comes, as it mentions here, he comes and he acts in such a way as that others can be benefited. And Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna didn't want to fight, but Krishna wanted him to fight, not for the sake of just fighting, or not for the sake of just gaining a kingdom. He wanted him to fight in Krishna consciousness. He wanted him to fight for Krishna. And part of the reasoning that Krishna gave is that Arjuna was a warrior, and that a warrior has a certain duty. So as soon as one gets a body, a material body, he has a certain energy. So that energy actually belongs to Krishna. And Krishna has defined different types of energies and what their duty are. Not that I have a special circumstance and I can do whatever I want because I want to be free. Otherwise I'll get psychological problems. Just like in modern society, you have to be creative or you have to feel free to do what you want to do. So this is all mental concoction. No one does what they want to do. No one wants to, we can't say, I don't feel like dying today. It's just not my mood. I don't want to do it. That doesn't really matter what one's mood is. One has to do it. I don't want to take birth again. I don't feel like doing it. Well, sorry, you got to do it. There's no question what you want to do or feel like doing it. That's the way the material nature works. So it is not that, you know, I have a body, I'm 18 feet tall, and I don't feel like being a kshatriya anymore. I think I'll just stay at home and chant some verses. Now, in the Veda concept, people knew that a certain body meant a certain duty. And if one did that duty, then the result is that he was not entangled by his activities because he did it as a matter of duty on behalf of the Supreme Lord, Jagavai Vishnu. And if one decided, I'm just going to do what I want to do, then the result is that he'd simply become entangled in his activities. As soon as the idea is that I'm going to do what I want to do, it's not really what we want to do, it's what the body and mind are telling us to do. So as soon as we give up Krishna's duty that he's given us, according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then the result is that one has to become entangled in the material consciousness created by the material energy. in the so-called freedom of doing what I want to do. Living entity has no, ultimately, he cannot be something other than a servant. So the idea that I'm going to do what I want to do, this is foolish. The living entity can't do, simply he can choose whether to be Krishna's servant or to be Maya's servant, but he can't be falsely independent. Therefore, Krishna advised Arjuna, tasmat asaktam sadatam karyam saktam karyam karyam tasmat asakta sadatam karyam karma samachara asakto yachara karma param apnoti purusham. Therefore, without being attached, so Krishna says, tasmat, therefore, asakta, without being attached, sadatam. When? Sadatam means always. Not that I just can't give up this attachment. I can give up so many other attachments. But this attachment is just too nice to give up. I'm enjoying this attachment. The things that cause me pain, I'll give up, but not the things that I like to do. Now Krishna says, tasmat asakta sadatam karyam karma samachara. So karma, karyam, to do one's duty, karma, his activity, samachara, in all respects. So without being attached in any respect, one should do his duty always. Asato yatirao karma, because if one does his duty, paramapnoti purusham, then he can gradually make progress towards the supreme destination. Karma naiva hi sam siddhim, astita janakaraya, loko sangraham evapi sampashan kartu maharasi. That even the kings like Janaka and others who are liberated souls, they perform their prescribed duties, just to set the example for others. So even liberated souls, if they are factually liberated, then they do what their duty is. Not that I'm liberated, now I can do whatever I want. No, if one is actually liberated, then the symptom is, he'll do his duty better than anyone else. He'll even be more fixed in doing his duty. He'll be a better servant. Not that I become liberated, so now I become the master. And no one, I don't have to listen to anyone. No, if one is actually liberated, then he'll be the best servant. Yad yad acharya shrestas tat tat eve tro janaha siyat pramanam kurute lokas tat anuvartate. That whatever example a great man does, then the common men will follow. So the more influential a person is, then the more he's obligated to strictly follow what his duty is, according to Guru Sadhan Shastra, because otherwise if he becomes deviated, then others, so many others will also become deviated. Just like it says of the king, he gets a certain percentage of the sinful reactions of his citizens. Because whatever he does wrong, the citizens will automatically follow, and he'll become responsible for it. And he gives a certain percentage of the pious activities, because if he acts piously, then naturally the citizens will also act piously. Not that I can do any sinful activity, I can act lower than a dog, but because I'm the leader, it's all right, as long as the economy is all right. As long as people are getting enough to eat and sleep, that's the important thing. Then I'm a good leader, although I'm less than a dog. So, such a society is certainly doomed. It's already doomed. There's no question of the future being doomed. It was doomed long ago. Then Krishna says, Name partasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinshana nanavaptam avaptavya varta eva chakarmani. That there's no work even for God to do. What does God have to do? Krishna doesn't come here because, you know, there was a strike going on in the spiritual world and it was hard to find good help. So he came down to see if there's a few good servants left here, he could, you know, get a deal, strike a deal with them. Give you a Chintamani palace and, you know, no rent for eternity. If you can just do a little service, clean my palace or something. No, Krishna, he has nothing to do. Everything in the spiritual world is already perfect. He's not coming here because he has some necessity. There's no real work, reason for Krishna to come here. Krishna only comes here to set an example so others can follow. Because Krishna, being the ultimate father, He says, Sarva Yonishi Kondeya Morti Yaksam Bhavantiya Tasad Brahma Mahadyonira Aham Bija Pradapita. The Krishna says that I'm the seed-giving father. I'm the ultimate authority for everyone. Therefore, I have to come here just to show how to set the right example. So Krishna comes here, he doesn't simply act as God. Sometimes he does. But generally he acts as an ordinary person and sets the example for others to follow. He's on the battlefield Kurukshetra acting as a charioteer for Arjuna. He performs all the rituals of the Vedic culture, and even he marries 16,108 queens, still he acts as a... So Krishna comes here, he doesn't simply act as God. Sometimes he does. But generally he acts as an ordinary person and sets the example for others to follow. He's on the battlefield Kurukshetra acting as a charioteer for Arjuna. He performs all the rituals of the Vedic culture, and even he marries 16,108 queens, still he acts as a perfect Vedic husband for each one of them, simultaneously. So although simultaneously, it's impossible to imitate Krishna's marrying 16,108 queens and living with them, but one can see by Krishna's example in each one of those instances how to rise early in the morning and how to perform the Vedic rituals. So, if we look at Krishna's example, then we can understand what is the proper activity. Of course, as it mentions here, that sometimes Krishna acts in an extraordinary way just to show us that he's God. So when he lifts Govardhan Hill with his little pinky and holds it for 7 days, we should appreciate that Krishna is God. He's not just an ordinary person. Not taking the mood of Kamsa when he was told by Akrura that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Kamsa saying, so what? Why are you saying he's God? Just because he lifted one pebble Govardhan Hill. Just he's defeated one harmless water snake, Kali, a serpent. Big deal. So we shouldn't take that mood that everything God does is insignificant. And if someone can produce a handful of ashes, well then he's more than God. So that's the disease of modern society. They take someone who's insignificant, completely ordinary, they take him as God, and they take God, who's actually God, they take him as someone insignificant and ordinary. So here we should see how Krishna, he's demonstrating, he's manifesting the proper example for us to follow. And at the same time, we should appreciate that even God acts in that way. Not that I'm God, why should I bother doing all these rituals? I'll just watch television. Do something exciting. No, even God, he shows us the example himself personally so that we can follow his example. And at the same time, we should understand what example that Krishna sets, anusharanam and anukarana, which examples which are impossible for the conditioned souls to follow. Just like Lord Shiva, he drank an ocean of poison. Kalakuta poison. So that doesn't mean that now I become a devotee of Lord Shiva, so I can smoke any kind of poison, following his example. Otherwise, Prabhupada says that one is calling death very clear, very near, by such a false following an example. That for the great personalities like the Mahajans, or great personalities like Lord Shiva, or Lord Vishnu, they can do extraordinary things, so one should not try to imitate the things that are beyond our capacity to achieve. But generally they set an example for the common man to follow, and those are the things that we should follow in their footsteps. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
Sometimes it's said that the devotees are in our society a little bit arrogant because they think that there's no spirituality out there, and we are the only ones that have a real role in mind, and everybody else is just wasting their time. But there's lots of spirituality in
the. Is there? Really, what are they doing? What is the spirituality that they're doing? Well, we shouldn't be arrogant, but we should also know just because everyone else is in Maya doesn't mean that we may not be in Maya also. But real spirituality, especially in Kali Yuga, means to recognize Krishna and to do something to please Him, especially chanting Hare Krishna. So either we're wrong, and the verses from the Kaliya Sandarva Upanishad, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Ganti Anyata, says the only thing, the only factual way of making progress in spiritual life in this age is to chant Hare Krishna. So either all our scriptures are wrong, and we're actually this material body, and then everyone else out there is spiritual. But even if you ask them what spiritual means, you'll just find out it actually means their mind. They think spiritual means their mind. If they can train their mind to think of nothing for 5 seconds, they think that's very spiritual. And then they can go back and take a break and smoke cigarettes. So they don't even know, generally people don't even know what spiritual means. Of course, there may be some persons performing some religious functions, and therefore they may progress towards some kind of spiritual, actually real spiritual life. So it's not that everything is one. There are persons who have some interest in God in a sincere way and trying to make some progress in that direction. So we should appreciate and recognize. But as far as actually a complete understanding of God, you know, a factual understanding of God, which is sufficient to overcome material existence, that's found within these books. Now, just because we have these books doesn't make that we're better than everyone else. We'll be better than everyone else as much as we actually follow the books. Not just because I have the book in my hand or in my house, therefore I'm a good person. And when the Yamadutas come, I can show them my receipt for the books. They'll say, oh, accept my basis. Didn't realize you bought the books. You remember the book club. No, it'll be as much as we actually understand the books and apply it within our lives, then we'll be able to understand what spiritual life actually is. But as far as spiritual life, real spiritual life outside of Krishna consciousness, what kind of spiritual life is it? To meditate upon the Son of God, you know, God as a burning bush or something, or a formless face. You know, this is not exactly provoking transcendental emotions within people. Yes?
And if after 20 years chanting of Hare Krishna, still is not provoking any ecstatic feelings?
Yes, therefore one can go on chanting for millions of years, and if he commits the 10 offenses, then he won't actually get the goal, which is love of God. So, which is better? Trying to do the right process in the wrong way, or doing the wrong process in the right way. Right means to become Krishna conscious. Just like if you're asleep, whatever you do in your sleeping state is a dream. And when we wake up, then you can begin your real life. So, what is right is what wakes you up so you can become, you know, into the reality of Krishna consciousness. And everything else is wrong. Therefore, Krishna says, Yakshastrin vidim utsrija vartate kamakarata asasidim avapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. That a person who doesn't act according to scripture obtains neither happiness, and who acts whimsically, attains neither happiness nor peace nor the supreme destination. So if you don't get peace, you don't get happiness, you don't get the supreme destination, then one is wasting his time. And what is the alternative? Krishna says, Trividas narakasyedam dwaram nashitamatmanaha kama krodas tatalovas tasmat etam trayam tyajet. There are 3 gates leading to hell, namely lust, anger, and greed. So every sane man should give these up because they lead to the degradation of the soul. So if one doesn't follow his duty, then he'll be forced to act according to lust and anger and greed, and the result is that he'll become degraded. Although within modern society, even the most degraded people, they're given a certain sense of honor. Just like that, I saw in some newspaper in India, something about the Academy Awards. So, in the newspaper, they have, you know, these movie stars, probably lower than the, you know, the lowest personalities, people generally in the modes of ignorance and passion, and there's a sense of honor being given to them, just because they can, they themselves are in an illusion, they're falsely identifying themselves with their body, they're in a dream, but because they can imitate someone else's dream, they're given some special accord within society. They're in a dream imitating someone else's dream, and everyone else who's dreaming thinks that these people are very good because they can imitate something that's simply false. And they're given special honor and accord. So it's not that because people are clapping and applauding, therefore what I'm doing is right. There are many famous, powerful persons who are, everyone was bowing down and saluting them, you know, right now. Right now they're having a personal interview with Yamaraj. You know, and their future is not, you know, the Yamadutas won't bow down and offer them so much respect. So, ultimately there are laws of material nature, and if one acts according to those laws, in harmony with those laws, and the best harmony is to surrender to Krishna, and to act as Krishna's servant, then if one does that, then he's doing the right thing. Otherwise, he's wasting his time.
What is referring to his revealed scriptures that his religion is based on, so that means good or bad?
If he's referring to the revealed scriptures?
Yeah. For example, Bible.
Is that good? It's better than nothing. Because, you know, the Bible, you can prove anything from the Bible. But any, as William Blake said, we both read the Bible day and night. I read black and you read white. That may be true of all our scriptures. Therefore, as it says here, Tarka apratishta shutya vibina nasavri shirmatam nabinam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena katasapanta. So we can argue what's good and bad. Or we can even refer to scriptures to ascertain what's good and bad. Or we can even cite different personalities to decide who's good and bad. But ultimately one has to choose someone and surrender to them, a Mahajan. One who's actually not only heard from scripture, not only uses intelligence to understand things clearly, not only associated with advanced persons, but he's accepted the philosophy, he's understood it, and now he's acting according to it. So ultimately one has to find someone who's actually following the scriptures and take them as the final authority. One has to take a person ultimately as the final authority and follow them. Everyone has to take a person. Everyone has a person that they take as their final authority. So that final authority will decide what's good and bad. That's called Mahajan.
Find someone who is following externally, but internally he's not.
You know, if you can find someone externally following, that's good enough. If that's all you can do is find someone externally following, at least he's following. I mean, in order to externally follow, you have to, it doesn't happen automatically. It takes a certain amount of knowledge and intelligence even to externally follow. You have to be trained up to do that. But if it's the right thing, you're externally following, then that's good. Imitation of a good thing is also good. Not that, you know, I'm actually want to be honest and I'm less than, internally I feel less than a dog, so I should really be honest and act like less than a dog. Therefore I'm being honest. You know, let me tell you what I really think of you. I feel like spitting in your face, so no, that's animal life.
Somebody following properly, but he didn't still require wisdom to.
I know, therefore we're not only saying blind following and absurd inquiries condemned, but one should get a clear understanding through service, submission, and inquiries. So it's not that we're trying to put forward the argument that blind following is very good, but it's better than nothing. To follow the right thing, even blindly, is better than doing the wrong thing, you know, in full knowledge. So blind following is condemned. We don't advocate it, nor do we advocate, you know, absurd inquiries, which is more or less just to speculate in order to get some mental satisfaction, how wise and intelligent we are. So we should understand things practically, in such a way as we can actually get the benefit of becoming Krishna conscious, becoming enlightened, of understanding our spiritual identity. So we may have so many speculations about how to keep this body fit, how to have a nice family life, and so many different things, but it'll all be tested at the time of death. Where am I going? How much have I actually achieved towards self-realization? If I'm actually a spiritual soul, and I just waste my time taking care of this body or other people's body, and I forget about myself, then what have I accomplished? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.